U of M alumni.
Good morning. I call the House Education Finance Committee to order. Hope everybody's going to enjoy the nice warm weather today. Odd. But with that, I think, let's see here. Representative Vernick, have you had a chance to look at the minutes yet? The minutes from February 20th, 2024.
Yes, I have.
Great. Would you like to move those minutes?
Yes, I'd like to move the minutes.
Representative Purcell.
Madam Chair, I have a technical correction. Northfield is one word when Dr. Hillman was here last week. Thank you.
Thank you for correcting that, Representative Purcell. Any other questions or thoughts on the minutes? With that, Representative Vernick, would you like to move the minutes from February 20th, 2024 as corrected?
Yes, I'd like to move the minutes.
Thank you, Representative Vernick. With that, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed say no. The minutes are adopted. All right, folks, I just want to remind you, in case I forget at the end, Monday and Tuesday we will not have committee. Tuesday and Wednesday we will not have committee because we have caucuses, so we will be back here on Thursday. With that, I think we'll just move right into our first bill with Representative Norris. Or Hicks, sorry, Representative Hicks. Happens when you walk in a minute before the meeting starts. Representative Hicks, welcome to the Education Finance Committee. Vice Chair Clardy, would you like to move House File 3722 before the committee with the intention of laying it over for possible inclusion in an education finance bill?
So moved.
With that, we have House File 3722 before us, and Representative Clardy, Representative Hicks also has the A1 amendment. Could you move the A1 amendment before us?
Also moved.
Thank you. Members, we have the A1 amendment in front of us. Representative Hicks, would you like to quickly explain just the A1 amendment?
Yes, thank you so much, Chair and the committee. The A1 amendment clarifies a couple of pieces of language as requested by the department.
Thank you. With that, does anybody have any questions on the A1 amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor of the A1 amendment say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed, no. The A1 amendment's adopted. With that, the bill is in the shape you would like. Representative Hicks, go ahead and present your bill.
Thank you so much, Chair and Committee. I am excited to be here today to share with you about PTEC in Rochester and discuss how this amazing model can help support further programs to start up in our beautiful state of Minnesota. The bill adjusts language to allow for all the allotted funds to be used and allow Rochester Public Schools to continue its great work and support other districts in development and implementation by learning from each other. PTEC has been an amazing resource for our community, and I would like to give our superintendent, Dr. Kent Kell, an opportunity to share more specifics.
With that, welcome to the Education Finance Committee. Dr. Pickell, please state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you so much. I'm Kent Pickell. I'm superintendent of schools in Rochester. I'm assuming, am I coming across okay?
Yes, you are.
All right. Thanks so much for the opportunity to testify in support of House File 3772, which would enable Rochester Public Schools and other partners here in our community to gradually assume full financial support for an innovative program that is currently entirely funded by the state of Minnesota. The Pathways in Technology Early College High School Program, or PTEC, originated in New York more than a decade ago. The PTEC model spans all 4 years of high school and 2 years of higher education to enable students to earn both a high school diploma and a two-year post-secondary degree in a STEM field. Students participate in a range of workplace experiences, including mentorship, worksite visits, and paid internships. Now, all that might sound like other career and technical education programs in Minnesota, and there certainly are similarities. However, the key difference with PTEC is that the courses PTEC students take in high school are explicitly designed to prepare them for success in post-secondary education in career pathways that are aligned with the workforce needs of the communities where they are located. There are two career pathways in our PTEC program here in Rochester, nursing and information technology, two fields in which skilled workers are urgently needed not only in our community but across the state. Very importantly, in Rochester, we have been deliberate in recruiting students from backgrounds that are underrepresented in both of those two fields into our PTEC program. For example, the 56 students in the first cohort of the program are now in 11th grade, And by coincidence, 56% of those students live in families with household incomes below $50,000. 45% of that cohort will be the first in their families to attend college, and 70% identify as students of color. So why are we here asking for a change in legislation to support PTEC in Rochester? Our PTEC program was launched in 2021 with full funding from the state of Minnesota to enable us to bring this model to our state. The legislative appropriation for PTEC is $791,000 per year, which currently covers the full cost of operating the program here in Rochester. House File 3772 would put in place a process that will enable our Rochester partnership to assume progressively more responsibility for funding PTEC in our community while making funds available to launch PTEC in other Minnesota communities with technical assistance from our team in Rochester. Decreasing state support for PTEC in Rochester in increments over the next several years is essential to preserving PTEC in Minnesota because, candidly, we do not have access to sufficient local funding to assume full responsibility for PTEC at this time. As I mentioned a moment ago, the first cohort of our PTEC students in Rochester are now in 11th grade, and they are from backgrounds that are key to Minnesota's future, and they are preparing for success in career fields that offer strong wages and open the door to lives of opportunity. It would be short-sighted to let this promising program lapse before those students enter higher education and before we can evaluate the effectiveness of the PTEC model here in Minnesota. Thank you again so much for the opportunity to testify on behalf of this bill.
Thank you, Dr. Perkel. And members, Dr. Perkel just got us his testimony, so that's posted up on the website in just a moment. With that, next up we have, only testifiers. So our members, actually, do we have any questions for Dr. Perkel while he is online?
And if you have any questions for me, okay, can we do that with Dr. Perkel still online?
Okay. I see that now. Representative, any questions for Representative Hicks about the bill?
We're just getting a slow morning. Representative Hicks, you're lucky. Would you like to do your closing?
Yes, thank you again, committee and chair. I appreciate the opportunity to have this bill heard today and laid over, and I'm looking forward to its inclusion in the final bill.
With that, we'll renew Representative Clardy's motion to lay over House File 3720-22 as amended for further consideration in the education finance bill. Next up, we have Representative Norris. Representative Norris, as you get settled, I'll ask Vice Chair Clardy, would you please move House File 2766 before the House Education Finance Committee with the intention of laying over for possible inclusion in the Education Finance Bill?
So moved.
Madam Chair.
Oh, yes.
I believe the House File number is 2764.
Oh, yes, it is. Sorry. House File 2764 before the committee, Representative Clardy.
Yes, so moved.
Thank you, Representative Jordan, for catching that. With that, there is also an amendment, the A3 amendment for 2764. Would you move that, please?
So moved.
Thank you, Representative Clardy. Representative Norris, want to briefly explain the A3 amendment?
Yes, I can. Thank you, Chair Joachim, members of the committee. It's great to be with you. The A3 amendment just makes a couple of changes to the bill. It tightens up some of the language about what schools are eligible for the funding, and then cleans up some of the language around the appropriation.
Wonderful. Thank you. With that, members, do you have any questions on the A3 amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor of the A3 amendment say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed say no. The A3 amendment is adopted. Now your bill is in the shape you'd like to present it. Go ahead and proceed.
Great. Thank you, Chair Joachim. So House File 2764 is a bill that aims to provide some modest additional resources to Minnesota recovery schools. These schools provide vital support for students recovering from addiction for whom their regular school environment may not be a good fit. They provide an array of additional supports for students, but of course, those cost money. This bill would increase the annual recovery program grant from $125,000 per school to $325,000 per school. These grants can be used in a wide variety of ways. You know, things like licensed alcohol and chemical dependency counselors, licensed school counselors, licensed school psychologists, licensed school nurses, licensed school social workers, or certain student transportation expenses. There are currently six of these schools across the state, but with student mental health and substance abuse only getting worse since the pandemic, these services are needed more than ever. And we can't afford to have any of these schools closed for financial reasons. And that is why we're bringing this bill before you today. And I'm pleased to have two folks from one of the schools here to testify about their own personal experience with how these schools can be so beneficial.
Thank you. With that, we have Director Michael Derschlag from Pease Academy. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Michael Derschlag. Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Michael Derschlag. Director of Pease Academy, Peers Enjoying a Sober Education, which is a part of Minnesota Transitions Charter School. Pease Academy is a sober high school for students in recovery from substance misuse. Pease is the only public charter recovery school in Minnesota, and it was the first of its kind in the country. We are asking you for your support of House 2764. The original bill was passed in 2014 in another legislative session. The original bill was passed because we had just seen two recovery schools closed, leaving only four left in Minnesota. In 2008, there were actually 13 recovery schools operating in Minnesota, and today we have six. If passed, this would be the first increase in funding for recovery high school since 2014. As the director of the longest-running recovery school in the country, as well as being the board chair for the Association of Recovery Schools, I've been advocating on behalf of these schools in regards to the proposed changes that their districts are considering. I also know that overall budget concerns are a very real thing, but I'd hate to see a repeat of what happened 10 years ago when needed funding for sustaining an essential state resource came on the heels of the closure of some very good programs. The lack of funding for these programs erodes the safe and supportive environments the recovery schools provide our vulnerable youth. With the cannabis bill passing last session, it makes it all the more necessary to have programs such as this available across the state. As the need for recovery schools increases, the funding support has stayed stagnant for a decade, and now many programs face significant financial challenges from dropping enrollment and the end of the pandemic funding. Furthermore, this would go a long way in making sure that recovery high schools in Minnesota are sustainable, especially as we see a decline in the number of available beds and chairs in adolescent treatment programs. Please let me know if you have any questions. I also did bring a student with us as well.
Thank you so much. And the next testifier is Lucy Getcho, from a student from Pease Academy. Please proceed.
Hi, I'm Lucy Getcho. I'm a senior at Pease Academy. This is my second year there. This is my second year at Pease Academy. I live in South Minneapolis, so formerly in the Washburn District. I attended Catholic school downtown at De La Salle. And in my junior year, I struggled with substance abuse and was seeking treatment. I found that treatment in a rehab program. And from there, I was recommended to go to Pease Academy. Since being at Pease Academy, I'm almost on my way to graduating high school, which is something I never thought I would do. And going off to college and pursuing a major in nursing was something I never could have dreamed of when I was 15 years old. The relationships I've built with not only my peers, but also the staff have changed my life for the better. I would not be standing here today or be the young woman I am today without Pease Academy. Thank you.
Thank you so much for your testimony. With that, I think we'll go to member questions. Representative Kreisha.
And I can go to the end if there's a...
Okay. Representative Hill.
Thank you, Chair Joachim, and thank you, Mr. Norris, for, excuse me, Representative Morris, for bringing this incredible bill forward. I want to thank our visitors from the Pease Academy and just offer a word of advocacy from my seat. I was able to take part in a mentorship program at the Pease Academy during my undergraduate years at the University of Minnesota, and it's a powerful program. It's worthy of our interest, and it's worthy of this appropriation. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Hill. Representative Baker.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Dershlock, is that how you say it? So before I ask you a question, Lucy, fantastic job, and congratulations, too. So hopefully I don't ever have to utilize your nursing services, but you would be a wonderful person to care for people. So Director Dershlock, something you said sparked an interest to me. So in my other job, I'm a middle school principal. Leading up to this year, I've dealt with one marijuana issue in my administrative role. This year, from September until we came back to session, we had 8 marijuana issues. So just when you said that with the cannabis bill, are you aware, is that a trend that you're hearing of statewide? Is that something common? I'm just curious when you mentioned that, if that's something you're seeing, and how that applies to our committee with long-term planning as well. So.
Director Dershlock.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for the question. With the passage of cannabis use, we have seen a more acceptance amongst all ages that this is an okay thing to do. So I haven't seen any actual numbers regarding youth using cannabis, but I do know that the attitudes amongst all our youth, and they're getting younger and younger, are positive when it comes to cannabis.
Representative Baker, follow up.
No further. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Clardy.
Thank you for bringing this bill forward. I think it's very important. I'm just really curious of some of your demographics, where your students are coming from, how big the school is, and then what's a typical day? It has substance abuse as part of the curriculum. So what does that look like? And, you know, how does that bridge? Kind of loaded, but there you go.
Thank you, Representative Clardy. Director Dershlock.
Thank you. So we actually serve students from all over the metro area. And actually, so it's pretty balanced right now in regards to Minneapolis, St. Paul, as well as the suburban areas as well. In fact, we have 2 students who are coming from, one is coming from Oconee and one is coming from Cologne. So if they can actually get to us, we can serve a pretty broad branch. We're actually located in right in Dinkytown, right in, by the University of Minnesota, and that's by purpose. So we can serve as many of the students as we possibly can across the metro area and beyond public transportation. A day looks relatively like any other school day at a recovery at any other high school. We follow state standards. The benchmarks is what drives the curriculum. There are math, English, social, and science. Depending on what they need, they earn all the credits they need for graduation. I think what maybe separates us is that we have a full-time chemical dependency counselor on staff, and instead of homeroom and advisory, what we have is what we call peer support team, and that's led by a classroom teacher. And it's a small group where that meets every day, where students support each other, living life on life terms without using, which is everything. Every student has access to our chemical dependency counselor throughout the day as needed to help them get through the day. They also have a formal sobriety support group with him once a week during our elective hour. But I think the most important part of what we can offer students is the students themselves, because they have an opportunity to go to school with, right, currently 28 other students who are all committed to not using and trying to change their life to for the better. Thank you.
Great. Thank you. Representative Clardy, follow-up?
No, thank you.
Representative Santamaro.
Thank you. Pease is, I think, a program that you are lucky if you don't have a chance to know about, and I think a lot of people and don't necessarily know about it. And but I will say, as someone who had a family member that went through Pease, I know that you all do life saving work. So thank you.
Thank you, Representative Sinsmore. With that, Representative Kreshaw.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Norris, for bringing the bill forward and to to the gentlewoman. Thank you for your testimony, not only for coming forward and taking your steps, but being a mentor for others. That's important. A couple quick questions to the bill author. You added the accreditation language. I'm just curious why we had to make that change with the amendment.
Representative Norris.
Chair Youakim, Representative Kreisha, I'm wondering if House Research might be able to talk to us a little bit more about the specifics around that language change.
Mr. Strong.
Chair Youakim, Representative Kreisha, part of the issue was about specificity about who would be doing the currently the statute refers to an approved program, and there's primarily one main agency now that accredits recovery high school programs. Organizations could be, schools can be a member of that organization, or they can actually be fully accredited by that organization. And the change in the language essentially puts a little more guardrails around how the commissioner would choose whether a program is an approved recovery or program or not. The director may have some information about the Association of American Recovery Schools and their role in overseeing curriculum and other things that recovery school programs do. But the language there, in my view, doesn't change the current group that would be eligible, nor do I think it would prohibit another group or ALC or charter school from going that direction. But again, the actual services that the membership has provided in that organization, perhaps the director from these could speak to.
Director Dermstadt, could you say your name again to make sure I'm pronouncing it right?
Yes, Chair Youakim, it's Derschlag.
Director Derschlag.
Thank you. That's exactly right. It's really just to put some guardrails on it. As Recovery High Schools is getting more interest nationally as well as locally, Association of Recovery Schools just wants to, I think, make sure that recovery programs. Several years ago, a district that was sending a teachers into a treatment center applied for the funding, and they got it, which is not the worst thing in the world, but that's not really what a recovery school is, because a recovery school is open to anyone who wants to go to it, and this specific treatment program who got the funding is only limited to those people who are in the treatment center. We got the state's Department of Education finally kind of understood that and heard that, but it was kind of a long process to do so, and so this just kind of puts a little more guardrails around what an actual recovery school or program is.
Thank you. Representative Kreisha, follow up.
Thank you. And so thank you very much. So it sounds like we're tightening it. I agree with that. And we're not excluding. So that's what I'm looking for. That my final one would be to the director. If this does not happen, what's your plan B? I mean the problem's not going to diminish if the funding doesn't show up. So what other recourse and what other plans do you have to take care of this?
Director?
Chair Youakim, Representative Kreisha. So for us, Pease Academy, we will stay open and continue to work for it. We might have to do some cuts in staff, but we're also seeing some erosion in some of the other schools, where because of the larger budget concerns that the districts themselves, because we're the only charter school, the other ones are part of traditional districts and ALCs, they're making significant changes to how the education is provided them. And so this actual funding would help a lot of the other schools kind of maintain the integrity of them being a kind of a safe, sober school where the students themselves didn't have to go be with the mainstream area learning center students who might be using substances in and out of school.
Thank you. Representative Kreisha? With that, any other questions? Representative Norris, closing for your bill.
Thank you, Chair Youakim, and thanks to the committee members for the discussion. It's great to hear that some of the committee members themselves have had personal experiences with the power of these schools. I don't think there's anything more I need to say on top of the powerful story that Lucy shared, and I would just hope that the state is able to find the resources to make sure we have more stories like Lucy's to come. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Norris. And with that, we move the motion that House File 2764 as amended, is laid over for possible inclusion in an education finance bill. Thank you, and thank you both for being here. Next up, we have Representative Sensomura, House File 3535. Representative Sensomura, as people get settled, would you like to play, would you like to move House File 3535 before committee to be considered for possible inclusion in the education finance bill?
Yes, thank you, Chair. I would like to move House File 3535 for possible inclusion in the education finance bill.
Thank you. That's the motion, and with that, go ahead and proceed.
Thank you, Chair Joachim. Thank you, committee members. I'm here today to raise up before our committee an incredibly important issue regarding student attendance in the state of Minnesota. So before I came to the legislature, I worked with youth, and something that we would say is that young people vote with their feet, meaning that if young people are not engaged, if they don't want to be there, they just won't show up. And that's what we are currently seeing in Minnesota schools. Some new reports that have come out today, and I encourage members to take a look at the packet that you have in your folder. There is a report about chronic absenteeism in Minnesota. And so what we are seeing is that in the 2021-2022 school year, almost a third of Minnesota students were chronically absent, meaning they missed almost 3 weeks of school or more. And so I know that we have spent the first couple weeks coming back into session talking about the amazing work that we passed last year, schools where students will get 2 meals a day, schools where students will get access to rigorous and relevant curriculum, schools where they will be supported with their student, you know, support personnel, or the investments that we made in teachers of color and recruiting them. But none of that matters if young people are not showing up to school. The reasons why students are absent are complex, and I think it is something that we should spend time in our committee digging into. The reason why a kindergartner is not showing up is certainly different than why a high school student may be skipping certain periods of the day. But we know that when young people are not in school, they are not able to learn, and that poses a great, I think, threat to the future of our state. So I'm here today to talk about one solution and really asking the committee to invest in a program that we know that works. Through the Minnesota Alliance with Youth, there is the Minnesota Promise Fellow Program, which occurs statewide. And this program places AmeriCorps fellows in schools to really support those students that are at risk of chronic absenteeism. Through Promise Fellows, who work with a caseload of up to 30 students, they are engaging, they are mentoring, they are checking in with students, they are being that kind of extra support, extra caring adult within a school. And I know myself, from having worked with numerous kind of AmeriCorps programs, mentoring programs like this over the years, I know that when I have paired young people with mentors and young people that often don't want to come to school, are not always happy to be there, once they were paired with a caring adult that they were able to develop a relationship with, the first thing that they would say when they got to school was, where is this person? Where's my Promise Fellow, right? And so I think that this is one solution and one investment that we should really look at investing in, and with the potential for expanding statewide. And so I'd like to turn now the rest of my time over to my testifiers who are here today.
Thank you. Representative Dabney, so nice to see you back in the House again. Will you state your name for the record and proceed?
Certainly. Thank you very much, Madam Chair. Members, good morning. It's a privilege to be here, so thank you for it. And thank you, Representative Sensomura, for your leadership on House File 3535, also the next bill on the agenda, House File 3534. It's very much appreciated. This morning, as Representative Sensomura indicated, the Minnesota Alliance with Youth, where Jim Dabney.
and your title.
Thank you. Good morning. Madam Chair and members, I'm Jim Dabney. I have the privilege of serving as the Executive Director of the Minnesota Alliance with Youth. We are a 25-year-old AmeriCorps program in Minnesota that places AmeriCorps members in middle schools and high schools to help make sure that more young people get to high school graduation. This morning, the Alliance, as Representative Sensomura indicated, released a report, Chronic Absenteeism, a National and Local Challenge, summarizing the current state of the crisis in Minnesota schools of chronic absenteeism. It provides 6 actionable solutions for schools, districts, and state policymakers. We are focused on solutions at the Alliance because our AmeriCorps Promise Fellows are delivering key solutions every day with students. Chronic absenteeism is a statewide crisis in Minnesota. In the 2021-2022 school year, the St. Louis County Schools in northeastern Minnesota reported an absence rate of 36%. Brainerd, 29%. Dropping down to southern Minnesota, the smaller district of Butterfield, a 31% absence rate. Stillwater on our eastern border, 26%. Thief River Falls, 32%. I could go on. Minneapolis, 58%. St. Paul, 57%. There are solutions available, and the report highlights schools and community organizations that are already taking action. You'll hear from two of them later this morning. But the most important intervention for attendance is a caring adult at school and a sense of belonging there for the student. It is increased caring in adults and mentors where Alliance Promise Fellows come in. Promise Fellows serve a focused list of students curated in cooperation with school staff. They are trained in research-based techniques such as establish, maintain, and restoring relationships, and motivational interviewing techniques. Our highly diverse cohort of Promise Fellows delivers results. A 2022 independent research study found that students working with a Promise Fellow attended school on average 5 additional days than their peers, and some student populations, particularly Latinx, Asian, and mixed race students, as much as 2 weeks more or beyond. Currently, we are just one of 4 AmeriCorps Promise Fellow programs nationally selected to have an independent return on investment study done. Why the Alliance for that? Because we have and use data to make decisions and focus on improvement. The state has a strong history of supporting AmeriCorps programs in education. The committee has funded our friends and colleagues in math and reading corps for many years, focused on basic skills. This committee has also supported College Possible, focused on that transition to college. If you look at the bottom of the handout you were given today on Promise Fellows, you'll see those organizations and ourselves listed. But you'll notice that there's a gap in state support between basic skills and college transition. And that's high school. And that's attendance. And that's graduation. And that's the Minnesota Alliance with Youth Promise Fellow Program. We're here today asking for support to respond to the crisis that Minnesota schools and students are experiencing with chronic absenteeism, and for your support in helping us get more students to high school graduation. Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, members.
Thank you, Executive Director Dabney. And with that, we have next up, we have Malaya Folan, Youth Engagement Northfield Community College Collaborative Director with Healthy Communities Initiatives. Director, please state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you. My name is Malaya Folan. I'm with Healthy Community Initiative in Rice County. Rice County currently has 13 Promise Fellows working in our schools and community centers. We hope to grow this number in the coming academic year. The Tackling Obstacles and Raising College Hopes program, better known as TORCH in Northfield, is one of several of our programs that have embraced Promise Fellows and made them an integral part of their work. And I would like to take a few moments and highlight how they have done so. Northfield can be a great place to learn and grow, but not all of Northfield's residents experience the same chances at prosperity. Persistent gaps in high school completion rates for our BIPOC and low-income students spurred the founding of the TORCH program in 2005. And to this day, these students continue to need ongoing supports to overcome the structural barriers that inhibit their success. TORCH creates a positive, welcoming environment for our young people to learn and grow, and AmeriCorps Promise Fellows are an incredibly important part of this work each year. Promise Fellows form an integral part of our student support network at Northfield High School, forming social and emotional bonds and creating academic support plans with over 200 students each year. Students who have the opportunity to work with Promise Fellows are more engaged in school, more likely to attend school regularly, and more likely to graduate on time. Martha Lundeen, my colleague, will soon share from their personal experience as a Promise Fellow how important and powerful these connections are. They truly make the difference in hundreds of students' lives each and every year in Rice County. The Promise Fellows program, by keeping costs at an attainable level, makes it possible for a smaller community organization like Healthy Community Initiative to expand its reach in immeasurable ways. Our Promise Fellows in Rice County are a critical link in our work as we strive to create communities where all youth can thrive.
Thank you. Next up, we have Martha Lundeen. Please state your name for the record and give us your title as well.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Martha Lundeen. I am a youth engagement coordinator for Healthy Community Initiative in Rice County. I want to thank you for the time to speak with you today. As I stated, I am a youth engagement coordinator, a position I entered as a direct result of my time serving as a Promise Fellow at the Northfield Area Learning Center during the 2017-2018 school year. Time is short today, so instead of speaking about the ways in which being a Promise Fellow changed my life, I'll ask you to follow me through a brief thought exercise. Imagine you are 16. School does not come easily to you. You struggle with high levels of anxiety and depression. Teachers and counselors at your school are busy. You know they care about you in a general way, but you feel pretty certain that none of them really know or want to know who you are as a person. It is easier not to go to school most days. Nothing at school excites you. No one at school cares about you. Imagine you go to school next year, and there is a new adult, not a teacher, not a counselor, an adult who roams the hallways, sits with you in a corner on a bad day, hops between classrooms and offices. This adult listens. They ask you about your parent, your younger siblings, your job. They ask about classes and grades too. But they also ask about your favorite band and that instrument that you started learning this last summer. It is clear this adult has time for you every day if you need it. And because this adult has time, it makes it easier to talk about what makes school hard, what makes thinking about graduation hard. They're helping you find things to be excited about. They're helping you connect with other adults in the school. And because of this, it's becoming easier to attend school. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Coordinator Lundeen. Next up, we have Colleen Cabell, Director of Student Retention and Recovery from Minneapolis Public Schools. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Good morning. I'm Colleen Cabell, the Director of Student Retention and Recovery in Minneapolis Public Schools. This is the 11th school year our district has partnered with the Minnesota Alliance with Youth to have AmeriCorps Promise Fellows serve alongside our Check and Connect student engagement staff. This partnership has brought nearly 200 Promise Fellows into our district to deliver timely, individualized interventions and encouragement to our most marginalized and disenfranchised students. Typically, our Promise Fellows are recent college graduates, though we've had several members who are making career changes and exploring pathways of interest in education, along with retired professionals, including one of our own school principals. Once their service term is complete, many of our Promise Fellows pursue graduate degrees and return to our district as teachers, school social workers, counselors, and check and connect case managers. The role of the Promise Fellow is that of a caring adult in the school building that students can easily identify as an adult to go to for support with academics, attendance, and someone who has an empathetic ear to problem solve and listen. Relationships developed by Promise Fellows with their students enhance self-esteem, promote academic achievement, and builds the foundation to create a sense of belonging in the school community and a relevance in learning. Their dedication to students brings the valuable resource of time, dedicated to get to know and understand the strengths and needs of each student served. There's not a prescriptive grid of interventions. Our Promise Fellows use curiosity, knowledge, and over time, an authentic relationship to help students connect, achieve, and thrive both in and out of school. Families entrust us with their most beloved children. Through our partnership with the Minnesota Alliance with Youth, these beloved children have a mentor, a learning coach, an adult who fosters a sense of wonder and learning. Promise Fellows promote pride and self-respect so students do not settle for less than what they are capable of. Aristotle once said, "Educating the mind without educating the heart is no education at all." AmeriCorps Promise Fellows help our Minneapolis Public Schools staff educate both the mind and the heart of the students entrusted in our care. Thank you.
Thank you so much. With that, I think that's our last testifier, so we are going to go to questions from the table. Representative Carasega.
Thank you, Chair Joachim, and thank you, Representative Sensenmayer. I don't have any questions. I come from directing a mentorship program for youth, and it is everything that all of you who testified, thank you for coming to bring your expertise and your personal testimony, because we know that our youth have gone through so much pre-pandemic and post-pandemic, and even just thinking about the bill that we heard prior to this, we need our mentorship services to be provided for our youth. These are the avenues of social work. Folks have no idea when they talk about the lack of social work that we have in our school that the mentorship services that are offered through these programs are fulfilling those gaps. And are kind of the patchwork of healing for the kids that need it the most. So I just want to give my great gratitude to you to bringing these programs, and I look forward to supporting this. Thank you.
Thank you, President Freeman.
I believe, did you have your hand up first? I think you did.
Representative Freeman.
Okay. thank you, and thank you for bringing this bill. I just wanted to share. When I did principal for a day at Justice Page Elementary or Junior High, one of the things they were talking about in their morning meetings was the issue of absenteeism and tardiness. And I just really appreciate thinking about, and particularly the focus on this, and having other adults in the building and having folks who are focused on how to help kids and their families and how to help our schools. Deal with this issue that I think we've seen more of after the pandemic, but know that it's an issue for a while, and it comes with all sorts of negative long-term impacts on those kids. And so I'm really supportive of this, and also just have had a chance to see it and hear from principals, from administrators, and also from teachers and folks in the building. And there was, I think, a Promise Fellow at that time who had been at Washburn and was doing things at Justice Page, and so just it's a way to keep folks in our communities focused on education, focused on our kids. So thank you for bringing this bill. It's wonderful to see you, Representative Dabney. The 63 is being well represented, but I know that this is a district issue that affects our whole state. So thank you for bringing this.
Thank you, Representative Freeman. Representative Bennett.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Sensenmayer, for bring this forward in the good discussion. And Representative Dabney, great to see you. I do have a question, and I'm not singling out this particular program because I'm probably going to ask this question a lot when grant funding comes, but just a few years ago we passed legislation that would require any program, and for example the Promise Fellow program, to identify an educational goal and then track the effectiveness of reaching that goal. So I didn't see any data provided. It sounds like this has been used in, at a smaller scale in different schools. Do you have some data you can present? I think sounds like the graduation rate is potentially the goal here, but just curious because I think as a committee we need to hear this, and that's why that legislation passed. We want to make sure that what we're targeting our money towards is actually effective and working. So we have data to show that graduation rates are going up in schools that have Promise Fellows, or I'm not sure what to even ask here, but just generally asking.
Executive Director Devin.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Bennett. That was a fine piece of legislation that was passed a few years ago as well. If you look on the handout that was provided, you'll see the 5 to 10 additional school days was from a randomized control study done independently, so it's the highest level of research rigor. We will be doing another one of those studies again next year. So as I said in my presentation, we go after the data. We use that data to improve. We are at the highest level of research rigor for AmeriCorps programs. And then in addition, we're subject to, is not quite the word, participating in a return on investment study as well this year.
Representative Bennett, hello. Thank you, Representative Padilla.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just looking at your last IRS 990 tax filing, the single biggest expense on there was $2.2 million and what was listed on page 10 as a living allowance. Mm-hmm. Can you speak to what that is?
Executive Director Dabney.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Representative Padilla. The structure of AmeriCorps is that federally, the AmeriCorps program provides grants to state commissions. Representative Greenman sits on the state commission. Serve Minnesota is what it's called. They then re-grant funds to individual AmeriCorps programs. We provide stipends to the Promise Fellows. That's what that's looking at. It's a direct pass-through of living allowance, the monthly stipend, the paycheck that they receive. We also provide access to child care and health insurance to those Promise Fellows that need it.
Representative Padilla.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just one follow-up then, just so I just want to understand it. So on the return, it was listed 366 employees. Those are the fellows in the $1 million or so in salary is actually management of the Minnesota Alliance with youth. And the bulk of that $2.2 million is going to those 366 fellows.
Executive Director Devin.
Madam Chair, Representative Padilla, exactly.
Representative Padilla? Thank you. Representative Green.
Thank you, Chair Joaquim. And thank you to those who testified today on behalf of all the students who do struggle with chronic absenteeism. I know in my area we've had a large issue with it. I toured District 288, and they have an amazing intermediate school program. But when I asked them how many students who sign up actually attend, the numbers were very sobering. You know, a lot of we can have these great programs, but if the kids aren't coming to school, you know, we're missing out on a lot of kids. But I'm curious how these programs, if they're if someone in my district would be able to access them, or if they're just in certain pockets of the state. And also I have a question about how if a student has been absent for 3 weeks, they're unenrolled. And my concern with that, and I know we've done a number of things to improve the number of counselors we have in school and the number of people who, you know, work with our kids who are having difficulties. But my concern is that once a kid is unenrolled, they're gone. You know, we might not ever get those kids back in our school. So I guess I have a number of questions, and I really do appreciate the attention being focused on this, because I think it's a huge, huge issue that needs to be looked at. And I really appreciate the person who testified. I can't remember her name. I think it's Martha. Great job, because that's the reality for our kids, you know, what they see in their schools and how hard it is to get back to school when no one seems to care.
Executive Director Dabney.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative. You had two issues that I heard there. One, on access to our program. We are a statewide program. Be glad to engage you offline on how do we best engage the schools in your area. We would be grateful for that opportunity. For the second set of issues around attendance, around disenrollment, I'm, I think, going to follow the committee and tradition of punting to the nonpartisan staff, because that's above my pay grade.
Thank you. Mr. Strom, our statutes on unenrollment.
Chair Joachim, Representative Ream, the way that funding works for Minnesota is based on the average daily membership in school buildings. And that's essentially the year-long FTE that the account for the student. There's no penalty for a single absence or an excused absence in our average daily membership. The statute says that if a student misses 15 continuous days of school, then they're unenrolled from that school. So essentially then the funding stops for that student for the school once those 15 days expire, and that student is just counted for the period of time, including those 15 days that they were at that school. I'm not sure if former Representative Davney knows whether the Promise Fellows continue to work with students who are unenrolled or not, or perhaps the Minneapolis director could speak to that, whether once they hit that 15 days, if there's anything that prohibits the Promise Fellows from continuing to work with them. A student may choose to re-enroll at any time, and then that starts the 15-day clock again for that student, so it's not a one and done with that.
Director Kibel.
Thank you. So we are, by state statute, mandated to drop a student, withdraw them for non-attendance after 15 consecutive absences. Our Promise Fellows do continue to work with students, but in Minneapolis Public Schools, we have a program called We Want You Back. And weekly, they run a report of any student who is withdrawn for consecutive absences, and they do outreach. That outreach includes home visits, social media, kind of working through friends to locate where a family might be, and to get them back in school. I believe we are the only district in the state that offers this, but it's a rapid intervention. It's based on the check and connect model of building a relationship, finding the ideal fit for the student, not only getting them re-enrolled, but getting them support once they get back into the school, and to make sure that they stay there. Re-enrolling a student is not difficult. It's getting them to attend and engage where the challenge is. So if they go back to one of our schools where we have a Promise Fellow, they re-engage and they have that Promise Fellow for support. If not, we try to find another adult where they can build a trusting relationship and improve their attendance.
Thank you, Director. Representative Baker.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, thank you for your testimony. I wasn't going to say anything on this bill, but when Representative Ream brought up the 15-day drop, this has been something, frankly, is one of the things that kind of propelled me to get involved in politics. There's a lot to that issue. It's a significant issue within school districts. It is a funding statute, as Mr. Strom said, so much so that the interpretation is that even after school districts drop a student and are no longer receiving payment for that student, school districts still have an obligation to try to track that student down. So I think we have to just really understand that districts are working really, really hard right from the get-go when a kid is not at school. So on a very basic level, in all of the districts I've served, there's an automatic phone call that goes out by 10, 11 o'clock, depending on the district, that notifies the family that the kid isn't at school. And then there's policy laid out for unexcused absences and excused absences on when districts are connecting. So districts are working really, really hard to with their employees that they have. Oftentimes it's mental health staff or administrative staff. So there's a lot of work to do, and I could talk for a long time just about the 15-day drop rule, but that is something that we should be working on, and I've got some thoughts on that. So I look forward to working with whoever wants to on that issue.
Thank you. With that, I don't see any further questions. So Representative Spencer Murrow, would you like to wrap it up?
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, members, for the discussion. One of my testifiers evoked Aristotle, so I think I will end by evoking another great thinker. In the mortal words of Jackson 5, I want you back. I want young people back in schools. I think we all want young people back in schools, and I think investing in the Promise Fellows is one way to do that. So I hope others will support me in the possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Representative Spencer Murrow. We'll renew the motion that House File 3535 is laid over for possible inclusion in an education finance bill. And with that, we're moving right on to the next bill, House File 3534. Would you like to move that before the committee?
Yes, I would like to move the House File 3534.
Representative Spencer Murrow moves House File 3534 before the committee. And go ahead and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, members. So this is House File 3534. This is the bill to fund the Minnesota Youth Council. So one thing that I have observed in my brief time in the legislature, and I think particularly with this committee, is that I think all of us really value youth voice. We really value and understand that to make good decisions about what is happening in our schools, what is affecting our students, we need to listen to young people. And so this body, in our infinite wisdom 10 years ago, created the Minnesota Youth Council, but also in our infinite wisdom, we did not provide the Minnesota Youth Council with ongoing funding. And so that's what we are here to do today, to hopefully correct this. So the Minnesota Youth Council was established about a little over 10 years ago as really a way to ensure that the legislative body, the governor, was consulting with young people on the decisions that we make and having more formal channels for bringing youth voice into the process. The Minnesota Youth Council is comprised of 36 young people from across the state, 4 people from each congressional district, and then 4 at-large members who convene and come up with their own legislative agenda and then work with our body to ensure that they are having a voice on important matters. I have had the privilege for the last year of being the legislative liaison from the House DFL caucus to the Minnesota Youth Council, and I've just been really incredibly impressed by the thoughtfulness, the willing to engage on issues, the willing to take difficult political positions that our young people have had. Just a plug, I believe that they're still looking for a GOP House member, so I'm sure many people in here would love to play that role. And so this bill would provide ongoing funding to ensure that we can adequately staff the program, to ensure that young people get stipends for the work that they are putting in, and to really ensure the sustainability of the program. So that's what this bill does, giving the Minnesota Youth Council ongoing funding. And I would love to invite my testifiers to share more about the program.
Thank you so much. And with that, we have our first testifier, Priscilla Mayoa. I am sorry, please pronounce it right for me. Please state your name for the record and your title.
Thank you so much. Good morning, Chair Yoakim, members of the committee. My name is Priscilla Mayoa, and I'm honored to serve as the director of the Minnesota Youth Council. Today I'm here to express support for the House File 3534, which seeks funding to bolster the crucial activities of our council. First and foremost, I just want to extend my gratitude to Representative Spencer Murrow for the recognition of the critical role that young people play in legislative and policy decision making. Allow me to share a bit of my personal journey with you. My path in youth leadership began at North Hennepin Community College. I had the experience to serve on the Student Senate. As a first-generation immigrant, I was given this extraordinary opportunity to represent my peers, a journey that ignited my passion for civic engagement. I went on to serve and represent students on a statewide level for 2 more years, and that was really exciting. And through those experiences and many others, I became a staunch advocate for ensuring that young people have a seat at the table in decisions that shape their lives and their futures. This is precisely the role that the Minnesota Youth Council fulfills for middle and high school students across our state. It serves as a gateway for young individuals to engage in policymaking and embark on the part towards becoming civically engaged adults. The Youth Council not only offers a transformational leadership experience, but it also fosters inclusivity by empowering individuals from diverse and often marginalized backgrounds to envision themselves as future policymakers, like you all are right now, for our state.
my own journey did not just happen, you know, by mistake. It was made possible through the deliberate efforts of adults who shared their power and resources. Today, we have the passionate young people ready to drive positive change. What we need are the resources necessary to sustain an effective youth council, one that continues to provide invaluable guidance to our governor and the legislature on matters crucial to the well-being and prosperity of young people in Minnesota. In conclusion, by investing in the Minnesota Youth Council, we're not just investing in the present, we're also investing in the future where all the voices of young people are heard and valued, and they're empowered to enact positive change. I urge you all to please support this bill, and thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you so much, Director. Next up, we have Charlie Schmidt, Washburn High School member of the Minnesota Youth Alliance. Youth Council, sorry. Go ahead and state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Chair Joachim, and thank you to the committee for giving me time to speak today. My name is Charlie Schmidt. I'm a senior at Washburn High School in Minneapolis, and I'm currently serving my third year on the Minnesota Youth Council. For those who don't know, Minnesota Youth Council is a collection of youth from across the state that work together to advocate and pass legislation on youth issues. We're also the only legislatively mandated youth group in the country. Last year, I testified on numerous times on bills that were important to youth, and one of those bills was passing a law. The Minnesota Youth Council is a life-changing experience. In your time at the Youth Council, you learn how to advocate for yourself and for other youth through the legislature and how to make sure your message is heard. You get the chance to connect with people from across the state that you never would have connected with before and get the opportunity to consider and learn new perspectives pertaining to youth issues. I've worked on projects like Safe Routes to School with the Minnesota Department of Transportation, and currently my committee, which I co-chair, the Education Equity Committee, is working with the Department of Education on a youth engagement survey that's going to go out to every high schooler in Minnesota. And I've also had the privilege to work with a few of you personally on your own bills and agendas. Without the Youth Council, none of this would have happened. I joined the Youth Council in the beginning of my sophomore year in high school because I felt like I wanted to do something to help out youth instead of sitting and ranting to my parents about what I thought should be done. I can honestly say that the Minnesota Youth Council is the most rewarding experience of my life. It has helped me better myself and better my community. As someone who's been interested in politics since freshman year, thanks to the West Wing, I can say that the Youth Council is what truly allowed me to engage and to pursue my passion, and I will be pursuing it as a political science major next year. So not only does the Youth Council strive to make change and better the world around us, but the council also makes changes and betters the youth, the adults, and the legislators that engage and participate with it. Throughout my years of participation in various other youth programs like Model United Nations and Youth in Government, I've met youth from across the country who strive to advocate. While all these kids strive to advocate, and many of them do advocate, what they do say to me is that they are jealous. The youth in this nation are jealous of the Youth Council that this state has mandated to exist. The Youth Council, in my opinion, is the crown jewel of youth engagement in Minnesota, and without it, we lose this era of promoting and encouraging youth engagement. I'm here today to make sure that young people across the state can have the same experience as me for many years to come. And I'm here because without this bill, the Youth Council will eventually dissolve due to lack of funding, and youth voice will go back to being discarded and ignored, just like it is and most other states. Youth engagement is so important in Minnesota, and I'm here to set a precedent for other states that youth voice does matter, and we have something important to say. Thank you so much for your time. Please support House File 3534.
Thank you for your time and for being actively engaged in building Minnesota. So with that, we have our final testifier who is remote, Amaya Kawaja from Lakeville North High School. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Chair and members of the committee, my name is Ima Kwaja, a student at Lakeville North High School and a passionate representative of Congressional District 2 on the Minnesota Youth Council. Within our 36-member council, we bear the responsibility of bridging the gap between the vibrant young voices of 1,317,461 young minds in our state and the corridors of power occupied by policymakers and the governor. A significant barrier we face in being able to make contact with the young people we are obligated to represent is a scarcity of funding for crucial outreach events necessary to allow Minnesota's young populace to actively participate in the political landscape. It's one thing to allocate a group of young people to serve as representatives for Minnesota's youth, but another to actually equip us with the funding needed to adequately fulfill our roles. Young people are the future, but we are also the present. Our voices and stories matter now, and the more you invest in youth voice, the greater you guarantee a future of competent and successful leaders. Minnesota can lead the charge in altering the prevailing narrative that disregards the voices of the next generation. A survey by the Washington Post revealed that 7 out of 10 youth feel neglected by decision-making processes. Let our great state be the catalyst for change, allowing youth organizations like ours to expand outreach initiatives and enhance our capacity to represent the myriad of bright young minds in Minnesota. By allocating resources to amplify our efforts, you are not merely investing in today's youth. You are forging a path towards a tomorrow where informed, engaged, and empowered leaders emerge from the very fabric of Minnesota's diverse and talented young community. Let this investment be the cornerstone of a legacy that values, supports, and cultivates the potential of our youth. I urge you all to vote in support of this bill. Thank you.
Thank you so much for your testimony. With that, members, we'll go to questions from the table. Representative Edelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative, for bringing this bill. I'm a huge fan of the Youth Council, and I'm a huge fan of bringing youth here to the Capitol, which is why I was late to committee today. I think, you know, I would love to see more expansion of like, I mean, 36 is great, and also, like, is there a way to grow this more so that we have 2 youth councils? I think everything you said as a testifier, yay for political science. I did political science and legal studies as a double major. I think you're doing great work, and I so, like, hopefully there's ways to expand this. To the director, I can't see you. hopefully there's ways to think about expanding this in the years ahead, just because I think you're doing such great work, and it's so important to empower young voices.
Director Mayoa.
Thank you so much for that, and we are currently thinking about ways that we can expand it. Right now, the statute mandates 36 young people, but we're thinking about ways that we can have maybe commissions or even other groups of young people informing the 36 young people as well. So there are opportunities. We just need the funding.
Thank you. Representative Allison
Hall? Thank you, Madam Chair. Just one little follow-up. Statute that's written can always be changed too, right? Mm-hmm. So thank you.
Thank you, Representative Harris-Hager. Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Sensenmura, and for your testimony. I have a question as far as what are the demographics of students throughout the state when it comes to BIPOC representation?
Director Mayoa.
Thank you so much for that question. So right now we are, I don't have the exact numbers, but I can tell you that we are over 50% BIPOC on our council, and that's intentional work. We're not just doing geographical diversity, so making sure that we're hitting greater Minnesota and the south of Minnesota as well, but we're also having diverse voices, diverse experiences on the council.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just once again, as someone who was engaged as a youth, we didn't have this program when I was growing up, and I just think back about Senator Paul Wellstone and Representative Bruce Vento, who would encourage kids to come to our nation's capital. And, you know, it really touched our hearts when we had the opportunity, and we took that as a privilege because as youth, we knew that not every one of our peers had that opportunity. And it really does influence a lifelong impact on the work that you can do and be civically engaged. So thank you for bringing this, and I look forward to seeing more of our youth engaged in this wonderful program. Gracias.
Any further comments or questions? Representative Greenman.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Sensenmura, for another great bill. Thank you. It'd be hard for me to go without recognizing Charlie, who's from my district, from Washburn High School, and also has been at the Capitol. One of the things that he was working on last year was pre-registration of 16 and 17-year-olds. And I will just say, both from his work, but from the work that from students around the state. What has been really powerful about that is they helped pass a law that people have been working on for years and years, long before they were in high school, and it will impact folks long after, but also now are doing a lot of work in their own schools on implementation. And so that sort of engagement work, which doesn't start or stop in the halls of the Capitol, I think is a real testament to the work that folks are learning the practice of democracy. And then I will also say one other thing that since I've been here, there was a lot of work done on ensuring that high school students who were working in the summer got access to unemployment insurance, which was so critical. It was critical during the pandemic, but it is just critical given that we know that young people are shouldering. And so I think that voice, the voice that you've been able to present without an appropriation has been powerful, and I'm really excited about the idea of really putting that one in stone and thinking about all the ways that we can really further engage young folks in sort of every level of that work. So thank you. Thank you for being here, Director, and thank you for bringing this bill, Representative Sensenmira.
Thank you. Any other questions about this bill? Seeing none, Representative Sensenmira, final word.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, members, for the discussion. It was great to hear about the support and the ideas for, you know, potential expansion of the Youth Council. Would love to talk further about that. I think I want to leave today with two asks for the committee. I mean, one is please support this bill and its possible inclusion in an education finance omnibus. I think secondly, you know, please help raise awareness about the Youth Council within our caucuses, within our various committees. They have four kind of focus areas: environmental justice, juvenile justice, educational equity, and health and wellness. They meet and always have a virtual option, and I know that they would love to have more legislators come and talk to them. And so when you are working on legislation and when you are thinking about how do you reach out to critical constituency or advocacy groups, please make sure that you are engaging the Youth Council and engaging that resource. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Sensenmira. And with that, we'll renew the motion that House File 3534 be laid over for possible inclusion in the education finance bill. Thank you all for coming and testifying. And Representative Green, you had something to add.
Thank you, Chair Joachim. Yeah, I just wanted to put a shout out to the University of Minnesota alum that are here today. I see some of you worked hard this morning to find something that would be appropriate to wear on University of Minnesota Alum Day. I see some maroon and gold. and some of you didn't get the memo, maybe. But I wanted to give a shout out to the U of M for so much work that they do on behalf of our students. I have a daughter who studied Latin in high school, and she was able to study Greek as well through the College and Schools program at the University of Minnesota. And she went to the University of Minnesota when she was a high school student, was able to go to the Wiseman Museum, check out their old coins. But yeah, the University of Minnesota is such a great place for our students. And it's really the backbone of all that we do here. So shout out to all the U of M alum.
Thank you, Representative Ream. And with that, members, remember that we do not have committee on Tuesday or Wednesday next week. So we will see you next Thursday, February 27th at 10:30 a.m. same place. And with that, we're adjourned.